100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here, then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by Jonathan Wilkins. Jonathan is an avid waterfowl hunter, bear hunter, deer hunter, wild game cook, and the founder of Black Duck Revival from Arkansas. We discussed Jonathan's journey to bow hunting, bear hunting in the big woods, hunting smarter, wild game cooking, living a fulfilled life, and much more. This was a swap cast with the Black Duck Revival podcast. We were out in Utah at a Sitka event when we recorded this. It was really cool to sit down with Jonathan and experience his great cooking firsthand and how he utilized all of the stuff around the area we were at to, you know, embody that into his meals. So it was really cool. But on this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming from John Michael Tussle out of Pennsylvania. So if you might recognize that name, John Michael wrote in a few weeks back. So he sent in a bunch of different stories here. So I'm kind of sprinkling them in through these Mountain Buck Mondays. So he wrote in 2020, we ran several cameras in several areas, and we located an area where a creek bottom made a sweep and had several trails connecting to a staging area on the public that bordered a private cornfield. With several nice bucks frequenting a scrape we put in, I was confident we would get an opportunity. On November 4th, I headed into a spot well before daylight, planning to sit all day. At about 10 a.m., with action being slow, I picked up my rattling antlers and decided I was going to try and make something happen. I did a longer sequence than normal, lasting almost 10 minutes, and I hung up the antlers. I turned and started glassing around me and across the freshly cut corn and saw a buck come charging out of the tree line nearly 800 yards away. Unsure if the buck had heard me or was just cruising out, I picked the antlers back up and made as much noise as I could, rattling and raking the limbs around me. When I picked my binos back up to look for the buck, he was gone. Assuming he had dipped back into the tree line, I took my binos back down, only to see him on a dead run across the field, now only maybe 300 yards out. Realizing he had absolutely heard me the first time and now had pinpointed the sound, I got my bow ready and waited. He charged all the way across the field with his tongue hanging out and began frantically looking for a place to jump the trees, lying on the edge of the field to get onto the public. He finally did and came directly to me, offering an 18-yard quartering away shot, which I capitalized on, and he made it 20 yards before crashing. After a few phone calls for help, we got him almost 2 miles out. He was a gorgeous 8-point and my second mountain buck on public land in 2 years. Well, congratulations again, John Michael. And this isn't the last one we'll hear from him, because he's had a really good last 4 years in Pennsylvania, really learning how to utilize some of these areas and these public land areas, and in this situation, utilized private to, you know, be someplace that these deer wanted to hang out, as far as having the food source that you don't typically find in other areas in the mountains. So that was awesome work and a really nice buck. So if you want to check it out, go over to East Meets West Hunt on Instagram or East Meets West Outdoors on Facebook, and you can check out John Michael's big 8-point there. So head over there. If you have a mountain buck story you want to submit, you can send it to my email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. Now, please understand that it might take a little bit for me to get back to you, but I do receive the emails and have them all scheduled to go out. I don't pass up on anybody's stories. I share them all. So if I don't get back to you right away, I will. It just takes a little bit of time. But thanks, everyone who's been submitting all these stories. Have a ton to be able to share for the rest of this fall. So currently, as you're maybe listening to this or as I'm recording it, you know, I am in Alaska at this time, moose hunting. So hopefully the hunt's going good at this point, and super excited. This is an absolute dream hunt of mine. And so I'll be away and have no access to any email or phone or whatever, so which I'm definitely looking forward to. But one thing I did want to mention is I do have a promotion going on my website right now. If you go to eastmeetswesthunt.com/shop and look at the beginning, you'll see the information. But I'm giving away some Sika East Meets West Hunt collaboration hats. So I have a special run of subalpine and elevated 2 hats that I'm giving away with orders. So all the details are there on the website, but you can get them for free with orders off of the website. So go check that out. And it's got a really nice leather patch that has been done there. And I'm really pumped with how those turned out. So if you want to go check that out, again, eastmeetswesthunt.com/shop. All right. With that being said, let's jump into this episode. And I hope everyone has a great rest of your week.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Black Duck Revival podcast. This week, in tandem with East Meets West podcast, I'm in Western Utah, and I'm joined by Bo Martonic. He's joined by me, Jonathan Wilkins, and this is a swap cast.
Yeah, I'm excited, Jonathan. It was funny. I was talking to you. I was like, I'd love to get you on the podcast, and you were like, well, I won't to get you on mine. So we're like, well, let's just do kind of a swap cast and do kind of a joint thing and just have a good conversation. Cause it's been fun to get to know you over the last few days and just, I don't know, kind of BS and learn each other's lives a little bit. And it helps so much versus like doing these podcasts over a computer with someone you never met. It's a little bit more difficult and getting to meet you and just kind of learn a little bit about you has been pretty cool.
Yeah, man, it's been a cool couple of days. I think other folks are staying longer. I got to get my butt back to Arkansas, but I would say this, man, like these sorts of events, right? Which like this is a PR event, right?
For
Sitka's shooting some content and they got some media folks and all that stuff. And it's like, it's still weird for me, you know, like to show up to a place and, you know, like be listed, like, you know, they've got like a call sheet and it's like talent, ambassadors, media. It's, I'm getting more comfortable with it. I kind of hope I'm never all the way all right with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to believe my own BS, but it's really awesome to get to come to places like this, man. Like just pristine habitat, beautiful. I mean, that in itself is a privilege, man.
Yeah, no, it totally is. And I'd never been to Utah before. I've been all over the Western states and been lucky to just, I love traveling out here and seeing things. And Utah is really beautiful.
It's a cool place, man. I hunted here in like late season for elk and it was like all snowed in, you know, which was really cool because the critters stand out like, whoa, you know, and like, I've been doing some Western hunting the last few years, but like, I don't have Western eyes, you know, like just people pick up these things that like, I never would have seen it, you know?
Yeah.
I hunt at home. I hunt real tight stuff, you know, like you're not getting a 50 yard shot where I hunt.
Yeah.
You know, like I like being out of my element enough. Like I don't want to be like completely floundering, but it's great to be places and kind of learn new skill sets and realize that like you could never hunt all of the cool stuff in this country.
No.
Right? You couldn't hunt all the cool stuff in the state you live in.
No, you can't. No, it's funny, like so one thing I've learned like from Western hunting for the last, I don't know, 8 years or whatever I've been doing it for is it's actually helped me a lot back home, even though like the landscape's so much different. You know, my cousin phrased it in a way, he's like, when he's hunting mule deer in the open country and watching how they bed and they shift beds and do that, he's like, what our whitetails are doing at home, it's just all woods and you can't see them. You know, it's just kind of gives you a different perspective and you can see how they're using the terrain, the landscape, where a lot of this stuff, when you're in the thicker woods, like you're at in Arkansas, where I'm at in Pennsylvania, it's just like these deer and these animals are just like, a lot of it is assumption of like what they're doing versus you can get more confirmation by looking through glass and stuff out here.
That, man, that's a really great point because it, I don't know if I'd categorize it that way in my mind, but yeah, absolutely. I'd say like with turkeys, you know, that's what I'm coming out west mostly to hunt. I've taken like one elk of the year out here, but in Utah, but everything else I've done thus far is, oh no, I killed a pig in California, I guess, a few months ago, but it's turkeys. And like this, you can like watch them, you know, like I've never seen a turkey while I was turkey hunting in Arkansas.
Yeah.
You know, but like.
Until they're right there.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, never. I've never seen a turkey when I was trying to find one in Arkansas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've never killed a bird in Arkansas.
Okay.
You know, like.
Yeah.
We've got terrible populations, you know, like Arkansas is not in good shape with turkeys. I'm, you know, becoming slightly more proficient, but I'm not Will Primos or anything.
Yeah.
You know? And like, it's, yeah, no, I've never, I've like, I went like 1,000 miles away to get a bunch of turkey experience in because that was kind of like my best way to catch up.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to do it at home.
You know, it's, I've only turkey hunted out west one time. It was kind of by accident. I was bear hunting in Montana and ran into a guy that was a listener to the podcast and was like, hey, we shot a turkey way back in here in the mountains. And he's like, we're going to be leaving. If you guys want to go, like there's turkeys there, and, you know, basically gave us a spot to go back in and check out and went back in. And, my brother was a Montana resident. He had a turkey tag and I called in a Miriam's Tom for him and he ended up killing it. And it was so cool to see that. And I'd never even seen a Miriam's bird before.
Dude, there's something else with those white tail feathers. Oh, they like
beautiful.
It looks like they're glowing when they get backlit by sun. They look it's almost like this pulsating low.
Yeah.
No. Do you chase turkeys a lot in Pennsylvania?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of like a sleeper state for turkeys, but like y'all get a bunch of them, right?
It depends on the part of the state. So like where I'm at, it's low densities of turkeys. They used to be, when I was a kid, they were everywhere.
Yeah.
And now it's I'd say it's on, at least in the areas that I hunt, it's on the upswing again. Like this year was really good seeing a bunch of birds and being around, but it's just like too, in just where I hunt, there's no ag land, there's no anything. It's just Appalachian mountains and woods. So it's like, when you hear them, but it's just like, there's not, you don't see it that many. Like they're not coming out in the fields or doing anything like that. So it's tough hunting. The last few years I haven't shot a turkey. Up until then, I'd usually shot a turkey every year. Mm-hmm. It is like, there's parts of the state though that are loaded with them too. And then there's other parts that just are probably worse than where I'm at. So it's just kind of a mixture. Like we were talking last night about like, you know, densities and areas and how it's just like it fluctuates so much.
Well, you've seen that, there's this meme thing floating around on Instagram or whatever, and it's like, if you want to catch a lot of fish, you should go to a place with a lot of fish. And that's like, honestly, that's the most true thing I've found about hunting. Skill set absolutely matters. Woodsmanship matters. Proficiency with your weapon matters. Best thing to do is go someplace where there's a lot of opportunity.
It's like the same thing of like, all right, if your goal is to shoot 170-inch whitetail, mm-hmm. probably shouldn't pick Pennsylvania. Is it possible? Yeah. But I'd probably go to an area that has higher density if that's what your goal is.
Yeah.
To be able to do that. And you kind of got to be honest with yourself on some of those things and what you can make happen.
Well, we were talking about it too, man. It's like, anyone who doesn't say that, you know, the idea of luck, you know, is when, you know, you heard that people say like luck is when preparation meets opportunity, right? Like you can do a lot to prepare for when you get lucky, but I mean, I've never, and I know people do this, you might be doing this, I've never hunted a specific buck. You know, I've killed some deer that I was like stoked about and I thought they were real cool, man, but I've never tried to pattern one specific buck and target them. You know, I've had most of my success during the rut, you know, which is like,
yeah.
Dude, a lot of people forget that like you're hunting animals that they're acting totally different than they would the other 11 months out of the year. Right.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know if you want to call that luck, but that's something kind of out of your control. Now there, you can pattern that stuff. And I've just put myself in a position where I thought there would be deer coming through. I read sign, you know, and then I tried to, who we got coming through here? Hey-o. But, yeah, man, I mean, like, I feel like I've gotten lucky a lot, you know?
Yeah, and I guess this is the way I'll phrase it. So I have targeted specific bucks, and it's worked out a few times. Mm-hmm. It's not, definitely not like the regular where I've
been
able to.
Does it feel different if you get that?
Yeah.
Get that animal?
Yeah, it does. I wouldn't say it feels more special, but it feels different. It's cool to like, okay, this was a deer that I was really trying to figure out. But I will say like, at least in the areas that I hunt, like I said, in the big woods, there's not primary food sources necessarily from their going to these fields or anything. There's definitely a ton of assumptions that have to line up make that work out. And then the way I look at the rut is, I think the rut, I don't know if I'd necessarily call it luck. Luck is definitely a part of it, but I think it's like you get in these spots and it's like being patient and just like waiting it out. Like it's like picking a good spot but you also, I know people that'll just like pick a random tree and it, you know, it works out too. So it's kind of a mixture there, but they're definitely not in their right brains. They're thinking with a different part of their body than their brains at that time.
Yeah, man. And it's, you know, that's also, like, I don't use trail cameras, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because, you know what, still when I'm hunting, you know, and I'm like, I want there to still be some magic to it, you know? Like, I remember telling my dad when I started hunting, because I didn't grow up hunting or anything, and I was telling my dad about, like, bow hunting deer. Because the way I started hunting was, like, bow hunting deer, basically. And I said, man, it's like unicorns. You can be paying attention and not hear anything and turn around and there's like this, you know, everyone's had that. There's like this doe just like looking up at you and you're like, how did you show up here? And I love the magic of not knowing. I mean, look, I'm trying to put myself in a fortuitous situation, but I love that ultimately it's not in my control. And it's, man, it's, I still get like a little giddy, like when one comes within range and I'm like, I picked the right spot. I read sign right. I didn't know what was going to happen. And like, I'm stoked about does coming through. I mean, I'm stoked about, you know, big bucks. I've never killed like the biggest deer I've ever killed is the first deer I killed.
Really?
How old
were you then?
27.
Really?
Yeah. I bought that bow I told you, that same one I'm hunting with.
Yeah.
Where did I get it? It was like a $400 setup, and it was like four arrows, the case. You know.
We had a dog come through.
Yeah, that wasn't cool. I might have to ask this lady to
get her dog.
Dude, yeah, that's a whole nother situation.
Yeah. All right. How's it sound still?
Sounds fine to me. Is it still running? Yep. Yeah, that's cool.
All right.
We just rolled the punches.
Yep.
What were we talking about?
You're talking about your first. Oh,
pup. Yeah. But yeah, man, it was like just like a $400 setup. I got the bow, the Plano case. It had a whisker biscuit, like a 5-pin sight, and like some ammos that were. Had some camouflage pattern, which I quickly realized was a bad way to recover your arrows.
Yes. Yeah, I went down that route before, too.
but, yeah, no, I got him. I had that bow for, like, 2 weeks, and I got that deer and was super stoked about it. And, you know, I've been able to take some other deer with that same bow. And
yeah, you're still using that bow today, right?
Mm-hmm. I got made fun of when I was turkey hunting. My buddy Jay Byer was taking pictures for Sitka. And he saw me, he's like, dude, that's an old bow. I'm like, what are you talking about, man? And it's, you know, I shoot it with, I've got 2 pins on it. I did take the whisker biscuit off like 3 years ago and put a drop away on it.
Yeah.
I shoot Sportsman's Warehouse. It's like sold these 400 grain, it was like $35 for 400 grain, 12 pack of arrows. And I'm just like, I've been shooting that the whole time, man. Like, cut them down at home and refletch them. And
just simple.
Dude, super simple. You know, I killed that first deer with a Rage, but I've been shooting Montex, which I like a lot. And they work for turkeys, like 100-grain Montex. They work for turkeys. I've killed a couple bear with them. I'm not really like a gearhead dude. You know, I like to find something that works and if it's, don't change it unless there's a reason for it, you know?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And like, so I'm the opposite when it comes to, I've become a gearhead. Mm-hmm. And I've said it before, it's like that there's a detriment to that of like learning new equipment and getting comfortable with it and doing everything. When I was up in Alberta with Sitka hunting at Jim Hole's place, an outfitter up there, and he was like, he's like, I know when the killers come into camp because they got these old bows that are worn in, yeah, the strings. Yeah. He's like, they know their setup is basically what he's saying. He's like, sure. They know. He's like, when someone comes in with a brand new bow, there's not a scratch on it. It looks, you know, pristine. He's like, I'm like, how is this going to work out?
A bit more of a dilettante, perhaps.
Yeah. You know, it's just kind of interesting. But
well, I also know, like, my limitations, you know, like. And I guess this has changed a lot as, like, the proliferation of Western hunting. But, you know, the buddy that kind of showed me the ropes and got me on a hunt, he was like, dude, it's completely unethical to shoot over 40 yards. And I wouldn't say that that's the case. You know, like, I've seen lots of people that tax stuff. Like, there's a whole bunch of people here that could ethically shoot an animal at 75 yards, I'm sure.
Yeah, Chris B.
Yeah, I can't.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I can't. The furthest I've ever been from an animal and taken one successfully in a bow hunt was 25 yards. I've killed everything inside of that first deer I killed at 12 yards. I killed a bear at 5 yards. Like, my skill set is being able to be close to them. It's not in shooting.
Yeah.
And so, and like, there was like kind of a minute where I was like, man, I really need to be able to shoot 80 yards. And I was like, no, I don't. I'm never going to do that.
Yeah.
I see why it would be important for somebody else, but like, I'd rather, that's also part of the experience that I like. Like, I like being right there.
Getting close, yeah. No, it's fun. Like, with my whitetail setups, I try so hard to, like, get my setups are set up so I can shoot within 20 yards. Like, that's my goal, is to have a 15-yard shot. I really don't want any closer than that. That's about, like, a sweet spot. Get any closer kind of gets tough, too. But, you know, to do that, when you get an animal at that range, it's like, just that alone is like you won. Like, you know, you were able to be in there and be kind of undetected. Besides that damn doe that just seems to.
Yeah. No, those. Well, you know what it is? A lot of people say it's like, that's the part of the game that I like. And I don't look, personally, I'm not participating in hunting as like a sport. I don't think it's a sport. It's not a game to me. This is like a part of my life. This is how I feed my family. This is like how I get sustenance and personal validation and all this stuff, right? And I, you know, not to like hippy dippy it too much, but you know, like I'm mostly known as like a waterfowl guy, right? Like a bird guy. I'm super interested in animal vocalizations. Like I spend a ton of time like learning, I spend a ton of time learning to run a duck call, right? Same thing with like a speckle belly call. Same thing with like, mouth diaphragms for turkeys, right? I love the communication. I love the back and forth. What I'm really trying to do is like enter that world. It's not that I'm necessarily, I guess, you know, I don't feel like I'm trying to beat them. I feel like I'm trying to convince them. You know what I mean? Like, or like when you're calling ducks, you know, and you break ducks up in the sky and they come down and you call them all the way in, man. Like you kind of entered a different wavelength or plane for a second, right? Like transcendental is even a little too intense maybe, but that's what does it for me. Like, you know what I think about that bear I got this year? I think about looking up and seeing that bear, like, just basically walk to the tree I was in. And it wasn't the loosen the arrow at it. It was that chunk of time when it made it 30 yards from over the knoll where I couldn't see to where it was right there. That was, like, so special. And I was watching that animal be a bear.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that bear had no idea I was there. I saw, it was like fly on the wall. I got to see something special and magical that like most people where I live aren't going to see, you know?
No. And that was interesting when you were talking about that bear story with me. And I wanted to kind of talk about that because it's so interesting. You were talking about like your woodsmanship skills with bears, whether you want to admit it or not, is pretty serious in my opinion, as far as like,
that's nice to say.
Yeah. The way that you look at it and you're so kind of describe about that. Like, cause you killed two bears with your bow, right? In Arkansas.
Yeah. Last couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how are you kind of doing that with like, you know, the thick timber and woods and just like, you know, bears can be anywhere.
Yeah. So, like most bears in Arkansas are killed over bait. There's like more than two zones, but there's essentially two zones that are basically huntable. Zone one's up in the Ozarks. That's like where Northwest Arkansas is and stuff. And the Ozarks have a ton of private inholdings, right? So there's like all these people have cabins and 10 acres and stuff within the national forest.
Mm-hmm.
The Ouachitas, where I hunt, which is a different, you know, mountain range in Arkansas that runs from like basically like outside of Little Rock into the Badlands in Oklahoma. And there's not all those inholdings. So up in zone one, baiting is legal. And the reason baiting is legal is because it's hard to kill bears. And for 20 years, they were taking like 20 bears a year in Arkansas, and they need to take like 500.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm down in this place.
Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade short barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
All that to say, I'm at a place where, like, there's no baiting, right? So that automatically makes it a lot harder, right? It's also a low-density animal. But just like the fish thing, first thing to do is go where you know there's bears. Like, I know they're in the Wachitas. I know they're not going to be in the Delta where my duck lodge is, right?
Yeah.
So go to the place where they're at, right? And then it's just walking. That's all it was. It was walking and going places. Like, my buddy Clay Newcomb was like, dude, they're going to be in the thickest, nastiest stuff. So when I first started trying to find one, I just hunted the most miserable stuff. I took it a little bit too literally. And I just hunted the most miserable stuff, and I walked, and I walked, and I walked, and I looked for sign. It took me 13 days to find a pile of bear scat. And, like, I was getting a little worn out. You know, I mean, yeah. I'm averaging 10 miles a day. I'm driving 3 hours to go hunt and then driving 3 hours back at night and then turning around and doing this, like, day after day. But, so I hunted all year, never saw a bear, and I basically just learned a bunch of places where they weren't. And then I went back and kind of refined that and didn't get one the next year. And then I went back again, and I was getting my butt kicked. It was opening day. I felt like I was getting my butt kicked, and then I ran into one. And that was luck. Like, I came across a bear. But last year, what I did was I had keyed in. You know, I'd figured out they're not going to be where there's pine trees. They're going to be where there's food. They're going to be where there's white oaks. They're going to be where there's black gums. That's where they're eating where I'm at, right? And so I just walked that stuff, try and be quiet, try and play the wind a little bit. I'm looking for trees. You can tell when they've been up in a tree. They'll climb a tree like a squirrel and walk. And I've seen them do this. They whip right up there. They walk around the branches. They eat the acorns off the branches. If they haven't hit the ground yet, that's their food source. That's how they, you know, they enter that state of torpor. It's not true hibernation or whatever. But
yeah.
And so, and then I'm looking and I'm finding bear poop. And I'm, you know, I probably kicked open 200 piles of bear poop when I was hunting this year. I kick it open and be like, how long has it been there? And I'm like, well, you know, it's pretty freaking dry up here. The water holes are dried up. That thing, you know, it's not going to stay moist for as long, you know. And I'm just trying to figure that out. But basically just do that. Find the freshest poop you can find and then hang out.
Yeah.
And I did that. I found I didn't even tell you this because I missed a bear last year before I killed the other one. I was down in this spot and I was just getting worn out by mosquitoes. And whatever, man. I was about to take a picture for Instagram of just like this bear mark tree where it got up and scraped. And I hear something. And, you know, like, you just keyed in. You can tell it's something of size. And just coming out of this gunch, you know, just like grown-up stuff, like greenbrier and poke and all that stuff. I see the shape of a bear, right? And I was like, oh. And then I saw another one, and I got scared because I was like, that's a mama and cubs. I was like, I'm up. And they're like 30 yards away from me. And I still can't see them clearly.
Were you in a tree at this point?
No, I was on the ground.
Okay.
And these two bears popped out, big bears. I mean, big bears where I live. I'd say 300 pounds each.
Yeah.
This was so cool, dude. They came out. I'm 25 yards from them, and they'd start wrestling. They're playing, man. I mean, it's amazing. They're like wrestling, playing. One gets like laying on its back, and then the other one gets up and like kind of goes back to the thick stuff and just feeding around. And this one's just like laying on its back and looks like Baloo or something, you know? And anyway, it's thick. Long story short, I got drawn back on one, and I was, you know, couldn't make it happen. So when I was trying to release, when I was trying to, you know, let down, I bumped the trigger, and I shot an arrow straight into a tree root. I mean, like, buried it, right? I was like, dang it. But they didn't really booger. So I got another one on there, and I, like, took my time, and I lined up, and I had, like, a spot, like, probably about a beach ball spot to shoot through. And I'm, you know, it was 23 yards. Like, I felt like I could make that, right? I took my time, I shot, and I heard whack, and I was like, I hit something, right? But the bear just like stood up, and or he was already standing up, but he kind of like went forward a little bit, and just looked around and then went back to doing his thing, right? And I was like, what is going on? And so I got three, I had three killing arrows. And so I tried to shoot another one. And then he like boogered off. He like jumped because that one made a big smack. And he jumped off and he ran up 20 yards from me, clear as day, nothing in between us. I got no more arrows, right? He never like saw me. He never, but he just sauntered off. So I go down there and I'm, you know, I'm like, dude, I'm going to have to trail this bear or whatever. I find both the arrows. There's no hair. There's no blood. One's in a tree. One's like down in this dry creek bottom. Long story short, I replaced my broadheads and I put, somehow I messed up and I put 85 grain broadheads on this thing instead of my hundreds. And they just flew wonky, you know? And I, dude, you want to talk about soul crushing. I'm like, I just had that many opportunities and like at 20 yards. But so what I did was I sat there for like an hour, snuck out of there, came back a day and a half later in the afternoon, went up a tree. I was like, dude, I got to get up above this gunch so I'm not, take that out of my equation.
Yeah.
And I just sat in the tree, man, and I read a book and I got like to the last page of the book and I put it down and put it in my, my little pocket on my vest there. And like a minute later, this other bear came out and I got like a great shot, which is like, I'm totally fine with, man. Like I had some failure. What would have really messed me up is if I had put a bad shot on that bear.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I learned a lesson too, right? Like I just like one little mistake, and it's because like I'm using the same arrow setup for 10 years. Like all I got to do is swap the broadhead. You know, it's the exact same thing. It's flying the same. Like they're, I got the inserts in, they line up with my veins. However, you know, I've learned how to do it. But yeah, man, I just like grabbed the wrong thing. And I'm like back in the truck and I'm like looking, and I'm like, dude, an eight. Oh, like, you know, and it's like, it was preventable if I had been a bit more thorough. And so it was like a lesson I learned that was harmless. Like no bears were hurt in the making of this hunt. Right.
Yeah. No. And I mean, that's good on you to keep after it and keep like trying. Cause that's a soul crushing thing of like, just like everything, like you feel, say you go into that and you feel confident and then you just feel like at the lowest of lows, like I can't do anything, you know, at least that's the way I get sometimes.
I would have
like,
had to stop hunting for the season. If I had found blood, I would have been done.
Yeah.
You know?
And two, so there was another point in that when we were talking before, you were talking about kind of hunting that middle of the day, even when it's hot.
Oh, or like bear 30?
Yeah, bear 30.
Yeah.
What's bear 30?
Well, and I've talked to Josh Boyd about this, and he's hunting like Montana and stuff, and it seems like it's true, and like bear 30 comes from Clay Newcomb. Like I was talking on the phone to him the day I was driving up, and I did get that bear, and he was like, yeah, man, bear 30, you're on it. But anyway, just from my anecdotal evidence, I'm not, you know, when I started going, I was like doing it like deer hunting. Like I'm out there an hour before sunrise. I was never seeing bears. And I've gotten the conclusion, and this is other people have said this, I'm repeating other people's information, but like, I'm not going to sneak into the woods to bear hunt before the sun's up because I can't see anything. And I think I got way more of a chance of bumping a bear, right? It seems to me that they're very active, especially in Arkansas. Like season this year opens up on the 13th of September. It'll be in the 90s. Seems to me they're like pretty active in the evening, right around, you know, that first light. They're going to go and bed 300 yards away, like from their acorn patch or their berry patch or whatever, and chill. And then maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock, start getting late afternoon. They might come back out and, you know, start feeding again. So it seemed like my efforts were better concentrated. Like now I still like feel like I'm missing something if I'm not out there. So I'm talking about like 10 o'clock, maybe head out there.
Yeah.
And then hunt till dark. But you know, it's just like, I was looking at something on your Instagram page, talking about like, do you want to put miles in or do you want to put good miles in?
Yeah.
You know, like I can go sit out there from 5:30 to noon, but I think my time would be better spent from 10 o'clock to 6:30.
No, that's exactly right. And I've talked to, you know, a ton of successful whitetail hunters and stuff. And it's like, yeah, just what you said, like the good, you know, putting in the good miles and focused effort versus, you know, like there was a guy that I just had on last week on the podcast. And he was talking about hunting these thermal hub systems. And he's like, if you go into the spot too early, your thermals are blowing up in. If that buck's bedded up there, you're going to blow them out. He's like, it sounds ridiculous, but there's really only an hour out of that day where you have a chance of killing them because of the wind, as far as, you know, blowing up to him, waiting those thermals drop, the sun goes down, it starts swooping down. That's when you go in to make the kill. And it's like, for me, I've always had trouble with that because it feels like you're wasting time or you're being lazy or anything, but it's on. I mean, it's just kind of taking the facts or what's thrown at you and using that smart versus just trying to, you know, manpower it or, you know, outwork it essentially.
Well, you know what? I mean, look, I still enjoy that part of the hunt, right? Like I really, really like walking in the woods and finding small things that are new to me, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh man, that's the first time I found some owl pellets. Oh man, that's the first time I found like a chinkapin oak, right? Like this kind of acorn. Or, I mean, like I'm talking about like boy in a creek type stuff. I love it. Like, oh, here's a little pool in the middle of the Wachita is like this big and there's crayfish and stuff. And I can tell in the algae where the raccoons have been scraping their hands trying to catch these. Like, I love that stuff, right? Do all that stuff before season. Spend all day out there stinking up the woods before. Figure out, get some idea what's going on. Like, all that walking around and being in these mountains and stuff, like, I was trying to get down in the bottom. Like, way down in the bottoms. You know, like hollers where I'm from, that's what you call it.
Yeah.
And it, the way this piece of land is, man, is, and I'm trying to talk around this. I don't want nobody to know where I'm hunting it. But it's like you start up top high.
Yeah.
Right? And then if you want to get down to the bottom one, it's hard as hell. Like you're sliding down scree slides or like, I mean, I'm trying to figure out where to tie ropes. It's like gnarly, right? Probably not safe and smart. But the wind and the thermals are doing something completely different on the top. Like it's going up in the morning, right?
Yep.
But you get about halfway down that mountain and it starts to go down, especially if there's a body of water that's pulling.
Yes.
Right? There was no way because of the one side of it was landlocked by private. The best way to be coming downstream and walk up against the thermals, I couldn't. And it's like, dude, I could bust my tail. And all I'm going to be doing is broadcasting my scent down this the middle of this holler and just frustrating myself. And you know what? Well, I killed these bears. I killed them up top, you know, like, cause I can't beat a bear's nose.
No, you can't. And you just made such a good point too of like, and you being in there early is what made you learn as far as what the thermals and stuff are doing, because you could go to another area 5 miles down the road that looks similar, but maybe the body of water isn't as big, or maybe there's not as much shade down lower. And maybe that still you have an upward thermal lower down, but it's all dependent on that specific area. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's all so specific. And, you know, we run into that a lot with access. Like you can map out perfect access relatively easy by just using some common sense with wind and thermals, but it's not always possible.
Yeah.
You know, especially, yeah, you have access on top, or maybe you just have access in the bottom, whatever it is, or there's private land or what. And there's a spot I'm hunting in West Virginia. It's like that. It's like I found the spot that I think I could kill a buck. It's just like, you know, just a real steep draw coming up and just a little flat spot that's there. And it's real steep again. It's like these deer are walking right there.
Yeah.
It's perfect. But, you know, to come in on it, I can't come in from the bottom because it's private down there.
Yeah.
And it's like, how am I going to get in there without alerting all these deer as I come up over, especially in the morning? I really can't hunt in the morning because all the thermals are going to be dropping down and just like broadcasting my scent down through. And it's just, that's the reality of it.
Dude, my plan until I find all that sign up top, and like that's where I saw like, I think it was last year, I saw like 6 bears in 3 days, which is like, before that, I had seen 1 bear and I killed it. You know what I mean? Like it was a lot of bears for me. My plan was to get down on that bottom like 3 days early, get down on the downwind side and camp down there. Wait for opening day, man.
Yeah.
And like just, dude, I've had real good success like just in life, just doing stuff that other people don't see any value in.
Off the wall stuff.
Dude, like I bought that old church that I turned into a lodge, man. Like that was an old rotten shithole to most people, right? I mean, that's what it was. you know? But there was like a story there, and like with effort and like some intentionality, I turned it into something that, you know, like other people see more value in now, right? And is exponentially more special to me.
Yeah.
Right? Like being like, man, I really want to try and like, you know, spot and stalk a bear in the woods with a bow. Like it's a low success activity, you know, like there was no validation from it for years, you know, but, the most validating parts of it are not getting the bears. The most validating parts to me were figuring out where the bears were and seeing them, you know? And I mean, everyone's doing stuff for different reasons, but like, that's what I'm looking for. That's like part of the experience that I want for it, you know?
Yeah. You know, and that's, I'm glad you said that, you know, like the, so there was a couple years ago, I went to New York and I hadn't hunted there before at all. First time into a spot, just killed a deer in Pennsylvania. I was like, I'm going to go to New York and just have fun with it. I said, yeah. I'm not going to have any goals as far as size or age of deer or anything. Like my goal is to kill a buck there. And I wanted to do it by just like scouting, finding them and hunting essentially. And I worked up and I was fine, just hunter sign everywhere. And it was like, there's tree stands all over. And, you know, I was like, all right, I got up to the top and the thermal started coming up. And I'm like, I'm just going to work these benches around and try to find a feed tree that's dropping. It was a little bit, you know, middle of October. And I started coming down and all of a sudden I caught movement and I glass and there's a small buck just sitting
there.
When
you say a feed tree, are you hunting acorns?
That's what I was looking for, was acorns. That specific spot, there was actually not any, I don't remember, I'm not trying to remember the details if it was acorns or beech nuts, but something was dropping there and I saw the deer, you know, he's feeding in there. And I was like, if I can get, I mean, he was a small young deer. And I was like, if I can get, you know, within 40 yards of this deer, then I'm going to shoot him. And yeah. I just kept, you know, sliding in and just, you know, checking the wind and moving in and using the, you know, the big oaks that were around to kind of, you know, block me. I remember getting to this spot. I got to like 45 yards of him and I look and he's, he caught my movement yeah. or something. And I just stopped. So my dad always told me, he's like, when a deer's looking at you, take your hand, the back of your hand and just go like this.
Oh, like it's a tail
flick? Like it's a tail flick. So I did that. And then I tucked behind the tree and I just gave a couple of soft grunts mm-hmm. and I'm just like peeking around. I can't see his face at this point. And I see his tail just start, you know, he got comfortable
really?
Again. And it's a young deer. It might not have sure. worked on an older deer, but he just got comfortable again. And I just watched him feed and feed and feed and coming up. And I got him in range and ended up drawing back, shooting, putting a perfect shot on him. He went down over and died right there. And I was just like, this was awesome. And I quartered him up and packed him up in my pack and, you know, packed him out to the truck and just, yeah, that was it. And I was like, that was so fulfilling to me. I had just, you know, 2 weeks before that shot the biggest buck of my life. And then I just shot the smallest buck and they both meant the same thing. Cause
yeah,
it was
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
a totally different, scenario and just fun to try something new and learn and challenge myself to do that on the ground and, you know, stalking in. And it was,
well, it's also
fun.
Seeing like where your proficiency has taken you. Right. Like I always tell people that, you know, like for duck hunters, Arkansas is kind of like the Mecca for American duck hunting. Right. A lot of cultural value there, a ton of pressure, you know, and I actually like, I don't want to see anybody else when I'm hunting, if I can help it. Like, I'm not looking to interact with other hunters, any of that junk, dude. Like, I want to pretend there's no one else. I'm Daniel Boone, right? You know, like, that's what I'm trying to do. And what the competition factor in Arkansas has done is that your proficiency level in, like, your duck IQ, if you're hunting public land, you know, which is incredibly pressured, you've got to get it to a point to where – when you then take that someplace else, like, I mean, a mediocre public land duck hunter in Arkansas is way better than like a badass in a lot of other places. It's just because, I mean, like calling is so important. And there's a lot of social cachet in Arkansas with duck calling too, right? But I've been shocked. Like I went to California, this like super, it was this super fancy duck lodge, used to be owned by the guy that owned the Oakland A's and now California Waterfowl has it. I mean, and they're ducks. There's ducks everywhere. And there's, like, people shooting ducks. But they're past shooting ducks. Like, there's wads of ducks flying by and they shoot them. Right? And I was like, I want to work ducks, you know?
Yeah.
I want to break ducks, turn them, and get them to drop down. And I was like, dude, you can just sit out here and shoot ducks? Like, I mean, I've pass shot a few birds in Arkansas, man, but, like, those birds are wily. They're at the bottom of a, they're at the bottom of a migration line where they've been harassed. And there's a tree behind every Yahoo in Arkansas, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I get a lot of validation from I don't get validation from, like, size of an animal or the amount of the animal. I get validation from getting in there with them and feeling like I'm operating with them on their turf.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And, you know, you were mentioning earlier about, like, how you don't use trail cameras or anything. And, like, in my home state of Pennsylvania, I use trail cameras a lot. And I love data and I love trying to figure out that and try to find trends and understand that. And that's where I think, like, that New York hunt was so special to me, because it was, like, I just took – like, I do love doing that. But at the same time, sometimes I just want to go just hunt. And take a different approach to it. And I have a lot of buddies that are the same way as you, of just like, I want to just be surprised, you know, and just use read sign and just, you know, and when something comes in and I shoot, it's like, holy cow, this is amazing. It worked out. You know, that sort of surprise where, like, when you're running, you know, a lot of trail cameras and stuff, a lot of times you're like, oh, there's that buck, you know, you see, and they each have their kind of own places for me personally and a different fulfillment factor when it,
well,
when
it's
it
a personality type too, man. Like, I'm a person that, like, I think I'm really, like, internally self-reflective. But I am not like a numbers analytical person, you know. Like, I went to college, I was a humanities major. Like, I was, like, reading and, like, interpreting the why of stuff. Like, in high school, my junior year algebra teacher, because you had a choice senior year to take math or not, he was like, dude, if you take math, you're not going to graduate high school.
Well, I'm shooting a new bow this year, and I am pumped. After playing around with a buddy's Hoyt RX8, the smile on my face made the decision for me. The first thing I noticed with the new Hoyts were their extremely smooth draw cycles and the ability to adjust the back wall to make it rock solid like I prefer. I outfitted my own RX8 with the inline accessories that made installation extremely easy and balanced out the bow. My favorite accessory so far is a simple one. It's the Go Sticks 2.0 adjustable legs to make your bow like a tripod, but it doesn't interfere with any part of the bow or the limbs or anything like that. In addition, the integrated kickstand within the HBX Exact cams protect your string from excess wear when you put your cam into the dirt. Ground hunting or spot and stalk just got easier. If you want to experience what I'm talking about, head to your nearest Hoyt dealer and take a test drive yourself. You can learn more at Hoyt.com. The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
And, like, some people are comforted by numbers and, like, if you do this and you do this, you'll get that result. And that doesn't comfort me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, trying to work hard and get good at something and then, like, trusting my gut and my heart, that's what like makes me feel good, you know? And,
yeah.
And then I get a, you know, ton, you know, like, obviously I do a lot with, like, wild food and, like, cooking and teaching people that stuff. And I get a ton of validation from, like, preparing good meals with stuff and sharing that with people that I give a shit about, because it's like, it's being able to share. I mean, most of the people that I hang out with in Arkansas, like, they don't hunt. They've got no, the only exposure to, like, wild game they have is through me. And like, it's incredibly validating to like be watching our kids play, you know, and we're like all dadding it up there with our little short shorts or whatever and drinking some beers and eating, you know, eating some venison sliders or whatever it is, man. Like that's a, that, so for, to me, man, like the hunt's never really stopping. Like it's all part of it, right?
Yeah, no, it, I, and first of all, for anybody listening, like I was lucky enough last night to have one of your meals.
Oh yeah, we had some grub.
Oh man, it was, that was incredible. I think that's so awesome how you do that and take such passion. I saw you over here picking some stuff that was like,
oh yeah.
What were you doing there as far as like for the meal?
Well, so I just ended up, I just like went down to a creek. But that like comes in. See, that's where like you're talking about woodsmanship, right?
Yeah.
Like we're out here. I don't know what you would call it. I mean, this is like stuff I'm not familiar with that much. It's like aspen. It's
you got a mixture of like aspen groves and high desert is like, yeah, what it's called.
So it's like, you know, where you're probably gonna find stuff is where there's water. So I just like go down to the creek in that little Elantra that I rented, and like there's all sorts of stuff that you could eat down there, right? There's like tons of dandelions, which, you know, like the dandelions that we're used to are European invasive. Like American native dandelions are very, very small. So like I go pick some invasive dandelions, right? I pick this stuff. It's called like Milna, which you could really make teas and stuff out. I didn't use it. Some of this thistle you could shave down. And but it's like just that. So like the salad was like mixed greens, chopped iceberg, like this ginger dressing I made, and then like a bunch of just chopped up dandelion in it. And it rooted, you know, not to go too far into it, but like roots you to the place that we're in. You know, this idea of terroir. I'm real big in like cooking critters with the stuff they eat. You know, like take duck. You ever processed acorns and eaten acorns?
No.
It's a pain in the ass, but it's like worth it and it's cool to do. But you have to like leach the tannins out a bunch and then you like roast them. And but man, like you take a wood duck, you take the legs and thighs off a wood duck and you like, you know, braise that down and then maybe like mix it with a little bit of like Parmesan Reggiano, some sort of hard cheese, right? And then like a some like coarse ground acorns, right? Because that's what they're eating. If you kill a wood duck, you can pop the acorns out of their throat, right? And you stuff that in like a little very simple, just eggs and flour pasta dough. Make a little ravioli, right? And you give someone a plate of that, right? That hits way different than like, I got a bunch of beet sticks made. See, you can already tell how I feel about that. Like, that hits real different. You know, and it's like it's very connecting and it's very grounding. And like, you know, you could really get self-righteous about it. And you know, like the French term would be terroir, right? That's what they talk about. Like with, you know, like you grow this specific grape in this soil type, you know, the terroir of it, the terrain, the dirt influences that thing. And it, you taste it, right? Like that communicates. So like if I serve... Like, we met 2 days ago, right?
Yeah.
And I like to talk, and we've been talking, and, you know, and the beers and stuff, whatever, right? But, like, if you want to know who Jonathan Wilkins is, man, like, that meal I gave you, that communicates who I am. It communicates what's important to me. It communicates the food that I feed my family, like, how I sustain myself and the people that I care about. It's, like, how I put stuff together. Like, that's a way to communicate who you are. You're telling a story with that, right?
Yeah.
And that's like, that's important to me, man. And it's not always the thing that gets like the clicks, but it's the thing that makes me happy and like be able to be okay with being away from my family, you know, when I feel like I should be wiping diaper butts or whatever.
Yeah. And also like one thing is like kind of unique, this event that we're at specifically, we have some media people here that are non-hunters.
Sure.
And I think that really speaks to them as far as being able to see, just watch you, you know, in the kitchen. That was like 100 degrees.
Yeah. They don't have air conditioning in these Utah places, evidently.
Yeah, apparently not. But probably because it was covered in like 8 foot of snow ago.
Yeah.
But just like seeing the amount of time that you take into doing this and making these special dishes, and that's super cool. And I didn't realize that you had done that like everywhere as far as like trying to cook the game or whatever that you have with some of the surroundings or what they're eating.
I mean, look, and like, not always.
No.
I'm not saying I'm making that every night, dude.
No, I know.
but you know what? Like a lot of nights, like this is like one of my kids' favorite meals, man, is like I'm busy. I got 3 kids, man. I got stuff to do, right? Like I'll spend 10 minutes in the morning, like, I'll sear off a bear roast. Their favorite thing to eat at the house is bear and, like, speckle bellies, right? So, like, sear off a bear roast, throw in a crock pot with some stuff. Just crock pot it, like, Midwest mom it. Now, I step it up a little bit because, like, I don't buy chicken stock. Like, I roast the bones. Like, I got sandhill crane stock and duck stock and bear stock and elk stock, like, all that stuff in my house. So, I just pour jars of that in there, and then I come home and, like, real talk. Anyone who's listening to this, let me look in there. Dude, I've worked in restaurants. I've had restaurants. I've cooked professionally. Dude, crock pot bear roast, canned green beans, Bob Evans mashed potatoes from the cold aisle at the grocery store. That's like a 10-minute meal. Feeds my whole family. They love it. And I get to sit there and be so stoked that I'm watching my 4-year-old or my 3-year-old just mow down on a bear.
Yeah.
You know, or like every Christmas, they're sitting there just ripping, eating speckle belly goose legs. And, dude, that's like... That seriously, that stuff makes me so happy. It's like being able to share what's like. Maybe you played baseball and you like get to see your kid hit a home run, man. That's like me getting to see that every night. And so it doesn't have to be complicated. There ain't no one, anyone who's like these wild game cooks and everything is like a production. They ain't got kids. They ain't got a family. You know, they don't know what it's like to like get puked on at 3 a.m. and still have to like get your kids ready and go to work and stuff. And like. My kids eat a lot of whitetail spaghetti, you know?
Yeah.
They eat a lot of, like...
That's one of my favorites.
Dude, there's nothing wrong with it. It's way more honest than going to Walmart and getting ground chuck. My kids eat a lot of, like, duck breasts. My 6-year-old had a birthday party. We just went up to the park, had her friends, and I had, like, bear carnitas and wild boar carnitas and, like, ducks, and I just had, like, a taco bar. And, you know, I dressed it up, all this, you know, accoutrement stuff. But, dude, those little kids were playing on a slide a half mile from my house eating... bear tacos and just love it, having a great time, you know?
Yeah.
And dude, I mean, I felt like a G.
Yeah.
Like I felt like a straight G, man. I'm like, yeah, that's what, Ben O'Brien is a buddy of mine. And we were talking, our kids are like all kind of the same age. And I was like, yeah, my kid asked for duck tacos for her birthday. And it was like a flex.
Yeah.
You know? He was like, dude, you got a cool kid.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question since
yeah.
you've been interviewing me this whole time?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so like what I'm real interested in is like with this hunting space, what's kind of interesting to me is like folks that have like you're essentially creating your own brand, right? I mean, it's not essentially, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I've got Black Duck Revival, right? You've got East Meets West. Some people like their entire brand is their name or whatever, right? Like you got like Dudley or whoever it might be, right? But for all intents and purposes, man, this is like a very non-traditional way to make a living, right?
Yeah.
In many ways, it's very fraught because, you know, like it's from the outside, it seems like, oh, you get a bunch of free gear, man. And it's like, dude, you're like constantly having to figure out how to get sponsorships for this, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? So, and you said, how old did you say you were?
I'm 31.
31, right? Prime of your life, man. How, when you decided to do this, like, not at the level you're at now, but when you decided to do this, right? When you're like, I'm not going to have a 9-to-5. I'm going to try and make this work, right?
Yeah.
Even if you, I mean, like, to me, that stuff is exciting and also, like, wholly terrifying, right? Like, I had a kid, I had a wife, I had a mortgage. You know, I was, like, a firefighter. And I was like, dude, that's not serving me. I mean, the kid and the wife did, but yeah. The other thing, that's not serving me. Like, I got to do what makes me happy. Like, and what I like to do is, like, work with my hands. I like swinging a hammer. But I don't want to build your project. I want to build my own stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I like doing that. I like going to junkyards and having treasure hunts and finding shit. I like cooking meals, you know. I like, straight up, man, I like drinking beer. Yeah. You know, like, I've really come around to champagne.
Really?
Oh, dude.
You're a champagne guy.
Dude, you wouldn't think it. You know what I really like?
Some champagne.
I like sparkling rosé.
Okay.
And, you know, it's, we were talking about it too, man. Like, what have I got to prove, man?
Yeah.
Like, I've done a bunch of hard stuff, dude. That stuff tastes good.
Yeah. No. You know? Yeah.
But anyway, what, like, when that hit and you're like, I'm going to do this, man. Like, what gave you the confidence to say, like, I can go, you know, I can blaze my own path. I can make my own way.
I guess for me, it was like, I started to see there's a couple different things there. I had a little bit of confidence build up when I started seeing people asking a lot of questions, or like when it started, you know, my podcast was really about like trying, and it still is, finding adventure. Like, how do you define adventure, which can be going to like the most epic place in Alaska, or it could be finding adventure in your own backyard and figuring out how to do that. And when I started getting, you know, messages from people that were like, man, like, you helped me, you know, plan my first Colorado elk hunt. I've never been east or west of the Mississippi. Like, it was so, you know, eye-opening. I spent all year getting in shape for it. I was eating cleaner. I was just like, you know, become a better man or woman at home because of all this and this discipline that came with it. Like, I just felt good about that. And honestly, as far as like making it as a living, the only thing that I have, I'm not really talented at anything, but what I am, I feel like good at is not quitting at anything. Yeah. And I felt like that if I spent enough time doing this and just learning and crafting these things over time, that I could do it. And if I just didn't quit and just kept, see, okay, something didn't work, all right, I need to shift a little bit, and then just being myself and doing that thing for a long period of time, I was like, I don't see how it doesn't work. And it wasn't, and that's not me saying like, oh, I think that I'm the, you know, the best in the world at anything. It's not the case at all. It was just like, if I put effort into it. Now, I was in a little bit different situation, not married, didn't have kids, so it was a less risk that came with it. But I had, you know, I went to college, I had a really good job.
What were you doing before?
I was environmental health and safety manager for a manufacturing facility.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So, I dealt with air permits and water quality and safety OSHA training and OSHA and all that different stuff. And honestly, I really didn't love doing that at all. Yeah. And I understand that, like, you're not always going to love the things that you do. And, like, you know, what people see of what we do are like the highlights of it. There's, like you said, there's so much risk that's involved with it. Not knowing, you're not just getting a paycheck every 2 weeks, and like, you know, 1 month might be great, the next month might be terrible, or year to year. And it's like, but for me, it was like, I need to at least give this a shot and just go all in on it and see what I can do to make this life fulfilling for me and what I want to do. And that's just kind of how I took it. And honestly, you know, as analytical as I say that I am, there wasn't a whole lot of analytical. If I would have really dove too deep into this, I probably would have talked myself out
of
it.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of unknowns, and it was more of trusting my gut that I could do it and figure it out.
Dude, that, like, that not quitting is, now I will say, dude, like, some, you do have to know when to walk away from something. And I've had to do that many times, right? But like, I think that's kind of one of my skill sets, man, is just like endurance.
Yeah,
like, dude, I roofed houses for a long time, man. Like, I worked in kitchens for a long time. I've been on some hunts with like dudes that are way younger than me and in like way better shape, but like, those cats ain't never like hauled shingles for 16 hours for $100 a day because they didn't have food to eat. Like, yeah, they're like that blue collar. I got lots of issues with, like, you know, like how unhealthy a lot of blue collar, like, construction environments and stuff are, dude. But like, man, them sons of bitches are tough. And those dudes, like, the, you know, I worked with, you know, rednecks in Arkansas, man, you know, like, and I'm not saying redneck is a pejorative. I'm talking about like country dudes in Arkansas. Right. I was the only one up on the roof that had a college degree. Right. They thought I was a goofball because of the books I talk about or whatever, man. But like, those dudes worked and they were tough and they didn't stop because they were uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they didn't stop because they weren't necessarily being treated right. Like, I've never had a job where I was working in a positive environment. I've only worked in jobs where it's like dudes yelling and cursing and like wanting to fight. And like, that's most of the jobs I've worked.
Yeah.
But I work them that way because, like, I could not stand to be in an office. I did it for like 6 months and I couldn't stand it, dude. Like, it just like sucks the soul out of me, man. I like being outside, you know, like, this sounds weird, I love waking up. You ever been like, have you ever like run a sledgehammer all day or just like been running a fence hole digger and like you wake up the next day and like your hands are like,
yeah,
clamped?
Yeah, you can't even get them open all the way.
Dude, I felt like I earned it, man. You know, and like, and I'm seeing the detriment to it, man. Like, I've taken a beating, dude. Like, I'm sure that abuse I've put on my body, like when I started roofing houses and stuff, like no one was wearing a face mask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're just breathing in whatever. But man, like, there's also this thing where life is so finite and so completely unpredictable. And like, especially working as a first responder, man, like, and not to be morbid, but I've seen so many different ways that people died. I mean, just think of the most graphic stuff, think of things you couldn't think about. Young, old, everything, man. You got no control over it. Like, I've seen lots of people that probably deserve to die that lived to 100, and I've seen great people, innocents, just, you know, someone hits you on the highway and you're over, right?
Yeah.
Like, why not try and live the most fulfilling life you can? Like, and look, you're talking good months and bad months. I've never had a great month. I'll be straight up with you. I've never had financially a great month doing this, man. But my kids, I think that what I'm showing my kids is super valuable. You know? Like, that's not where fulfillment comes from. You know? Like I can't go buy my family a $500,000 house. But I can buy a foreclosure and bust my ass and remodel that thing, which is what I did. And I put my family in a nice house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
By working hard. Like, that's where I can bring value to them. You know, like, I can't afford, and I'm not like impoverished or anything, but like, I can't afford to go like spend $500 on a sushi dinner with my wife. You know what I mean? But I can bring her home something that no one else she knows gets.
Yeah, no.
And I can cook that up for her, and I can serve it to her and say, like, I love you and I value you, and like, I value this thing and I want you to have it because they're all important to me.
Yeah. And you can say that without even saying it in a way. Yeah. Like, that's, and
you can do that with whitetail spaghetti, man.
One thing that I had learned from I learned a lot from my dad, but like, one of the things was, and it wasn't even that like he came to me and told me this, it was just from watching it. You know, as a kid, I don't remember this because I was so young, but he, you know, he worked at a place where he was working 16, 18 hour days, never home, and he wasn't there when we were growing up younger, and he finally made a decision like, I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. And he started his own business with some buddies of his and just, you know, grinded it out, took a giant pay cut to do it and just like, make that thing happen. And you know, seeing that, and now, like, you know, and he spent so much time in the woods, you know, teaching me, like, that's where I learned most of my stuff was through him. I've been super lucky.
No, I've heard several times already, you've like referenced, dude, and isn't that, and like, you don't have kids yet, I mean, you kind of get it, man, but like, that's some real powerful shit.
Yeah, right?
Like, that's what being somebody's daddy is supposed to be.
Yep.
You know, and I said this to somebody the other day. It would, I can't remember who, man, but like, I've almost died probably 6 times, right? Like, real close. Like, some, like, just doing different stuff. I mean, like, nothing illegal or anything, but like, I've just like thought it was going to be over, right? And I can tell you, I know what I thought about. And I know the last time it almost happened, I know the last time I was in a fire and it was like so hot and I was like, this is starting to hurt. Like, I got gear on and my, like, when your tip of your ears burn, dude, like, you're in bad shape. It's like 1,200 degrees in there. You got to get out, right? And I know what I thought about when that happened, when I was crawling out of that thing, pitch black, all that smoke, and I was crawling out, following the line to try and get out before this, because we thought the house was going to go, like, blow. And it was my wife and my kids. It wasn't how much money I had in the bank account. It wasn't what Joe Schmo down the block thought of me. I mean, like, we're all consumed with like, what does this person think of me? Like, how am I coming off, man? But like, when it comes down to it, and people get, there's all these deathbed confessions of people like, oh, I wish I had loved harder and I wish I had worked less. It's like, how about you don't wait till you're 80 to come to that realization, and you do it on the front end, man? Because I also haven't met, as long as you got your basics covered, like, you have shelter, food, clothes, you know, like, it's nice to be able to do a little something extra, but I've never seen someone grow up and be mad at their parents about that. I've seen people never get over the fact that their parents weren't with them, that their parents didn't spend time with them, that they weren't involved in the stuff that was important to their mom and dad, right?
Yeah.
And like, dude, I want my kids around me, man. Like, I doubt that they'll go find an old church and turn it into a lodge and then drive around in a van chasing turkeys. But I want them around me, and I want them to feel capable in whatever they're doing. I mean, and like, let's be real, man. Like, I exist in a space where I like stick out. Like, there ain't no duck hunters with afros. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm not going to let somebody tell me that I can't do this thing that I love, you know? And I don't, like, I got two little girls. I don't want them telling them. My daughter said something about baseball is for boys. And I, like, got in her face. And I was like, you listen here. You don't play baseball. You're playing baseball. Now, if you don't like it, that's one thing. But don't you ever tell me that you can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you might do it and not be good at it. But, like, you want to do that, you do it. And there's a ton you're going to learn from messing up. I've learned way more from not getting critters than I have from getting them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I would say, like, the toughest seasons when it comes to, like, deer hunting or whatever are the ones I learn from the most than the ones that work out, you know, the first day or whatever. I always joke about, like, elk hunting. So it took me 4 years to kill an elk. Mm-hmm. I came out and first time was a 7-day trip.
You're just coming out next, and scouting public and hunting?
Just hunting public, going in, backpacking, truck camping, the whole deal.
Sure.
And second year, I think I went 10 days. Third year, I went 14 days. Mm. I still never killed an elk. My fourth year, on the first day of a 14-day hunt, I killed my bull. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, like, that's crazy. You know, got it done the first day. I said, that's day 40.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't, you know, and it might have been the first day of that year, but there was a lot of
time. Longer than that, man, because you were rethinking everything that went wrong. Why didn't I do this? I mean,
yeah,
like, dude, that stuff lives in my head. And honestly, it eats at me until I can get over it, you know, and, like, probably to a little bit of an unhealthy level. Like, I should be able to let it go a little bit more. And I can once I've, like, gotten over it. But, man, when you got to ride a year out being like, oh, if I'd only done this one thing a little bit different, it stinks, but it also makes the success, like, so much more.
Man, I can think of a thing right now where last year I was hunting in West Virginia, and I was there by myself and sleeping in a tent, you know, by myself, and I'd run myself down. I was just on a hunt, and I decided that I was going to hurry up and get down to West Virginia, and I drove through the night, and I got sick because my body was run down. And I knew this spot. I found this spot in October, and I was like, if I sit there for 4 days, I'm going to kill a buck. Like, I was that confident in it. Well, then I started, I said I wasn't feeling well, and I was just like, you know, kind of made some excuses on why not to go there. It was hard to get to. Didn't go there. What do you know? I checked my camera 3 out of those 4 days. Nice buck came through there. And I keep just kicking myself in the ass. I'm like, I didn't leave it all on the table to be able to do that. And it was more of like what I should have did was took a day of rest.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then went not saying that, oh, I should have just, you know, grinded it out. I should have been smarter about it and did that. But I think about those things all the time. Whereas, you know, that's such a learning lesson that hopefully, if I'm smart, I'll learn from that in the coming years. And when you have those gut feelings, act on them and be able to do that. And I feel like that translates to any portion of your life and anything. And I love it. And I really try to just like put it all on the table. And like I said, I've been super lucky. I think one of the things with this podcast is I've learned that there's a lot of people, and you know, you said yourself, you didn't grow up in a hunting family.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that haven't had the fortunate ability that I have with having great teachers and a whole family that did it. My grandfathers, and like, you know, I was shooting guns way before I should have been, like as far as a kid and going out and hunting squirrels and doing all this thing and like, you know, making those steps where like a lot of people don't have some of those abilities and they want to learn it. So it's like, if I can help do that and help people experience some of those things, you know, by them learning stuff through, you know, us talking or whatever else, or videos that I'm able to do, that's fulfilling to me.
Yeah, man. I mean, you're like the world's big brother, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, same thing with me. Like, I didn't have that. Like, I had like a father who taught me a ton about life and like how to work and all that. But like, my dad wasn't hunting, you know, like we didn't have guns in the house. I wasn't allowed to have water guns. So I was like 12, man. You know, like I couldn't watch The Simpsons. Like my parents were teachers. Like they focused on education, like reading, all that stuff. Right. But it's transferable too, man. Cause like my hunting skill, I've had great friends that have taught me stuff and I've, you know, had mentors. But ultimately, man, like this is stuff I had to earn and get on my own. And I like sacrifice. Like when I did it for the first time, when I just started hunting squirrels with my homeboy one summer, and I was like, I felt it was like, it felt something like was missing in my life and something felt right. You know, and I was like, dude, this is going to have to be prioritized in my life. I prioritize it over financial security. Now, again, I have to have a baseline because I have children to take care of. But, yeah. Like, I prioritize it really, you know, like above ambition. Like, I guess you could say some ambition is tied up in it. But it's also, I've seen that it's really powerful when someone like, whatever, somebody from a city or someone who's, like, didn't grow up hunting for whatever reasons, right? They're like, this dude, like, I killed my first animal at 27. I turned 40 in March. You know what I mean? Like, I went hard, man. You know, like, I hadn't even been hunting for 10 years, and I built a duck lodge, right? Like, I wanted it, and it mattered to me, and I put a bunch of effort into it. And I got to a level of proficiency to where, like, now people, you know, like, dude, I led some panel in Arkansas, this duck dinner, and it's, like, me and, like, Jimbo Ronquist and, like, if you don't hunt ducks, you don't know, man. But that, it'd be like you had never hunted until you were 27, right?
Yep.
And then you're hanging out with, you know, it's like, I don't know, Randy Newberg and Will Primos and old Chuck Adams.
Or, yeah, Chuck
like,
Adams.
All, you know, yeah. Old Chuck Adams. You got a Chuck Adams mustache, dog.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Hey, look in the mirror.
but it's that's really validating, too, because it shows that effort and wanting to, I think, can get you past a lack of experience. And to some degrees, too, like, I didn't have to unlearn, like, maybe my grandpa would have just been, like, a dirtbag bad hunter, and that's what I learned for 15 years, and then I'd have to unlearn that.
Yeah.
You know, like, I kind of got to cherry-pick who I was taking information from.
Yeah, he's just
from.
Shooting deer out of the truck window.
Oh, dude. Yeah. There's all sorts. I mean, that really happens.
You know, definitely
I mean?
Does.
Or, shit, especially in the South, you know, like, these old outlaws, like, man, I ain't paying the government to fish. You know?
That's not just a Southern thing, believe me.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all. We kind of, like, the South kind of, like, glorifies outlaws, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's. And there's many reasons for it, but yeah, dude. And then like seeing people that get that aren't experienced get encouragement from that. And you know, that's like a lot of the hunts I run, I get like new folks come through and like working with them and watching them like have that success. And like, dude, you just help them get to something that can never be taken away from them. You know what I mean? And maybe not the skill set, but the experience, man. You know, like, I've had people that I've killed. I've had quite a few people. It's their first bird they've ever killed. You know, it's like a person and their kid comes, and they hunt with their kid, and their kid gets their first bird. And then they sit out there, and they pluck birds with their kids, and, like, we roast hearts over the fire. And, like, you can see this kid is, like, feeling empowered and, like, oh, man, I can do some stuff. And, like, just because I'm uncomfortable and it's cold and rainy, like, doesn't mean I don't just leave this for somebody else. I started this. I have a responsibility. It's dude, it's so validating. It feels great, dude. And it's, you know, so what I guess that means that it's largely a narcissistic enterprise, right? Like, you could say that's all for somebody else, but like, I like the way it makes me feel.
Yeah.
And I justify it that I'm helping somebody, but
that's a good way.
If I was helping somebody and it made me feel bad, I probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I totally understand that.
What, totally unrelated question, man. What's up with you and this mustache? How long are you going to rock it for?
So I don't know. I mean, it might be a lifelong thing. I've had it. I haven't shaved it since 2018. Since the day I started the podcast, mm-hmm. I've had it. I used to just have it during, the rut, and I call it the rut stash.
Sure, sure.
And, I made shirts on it and everything like that. It was just like my thing. I just joked about it. And I had this mustache and I went to Total Archery Challenge. That was the first place I set up a booth and recorded my first podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy Rob, who works for Total Archery Challenge, was like, I was telling him about this idea I had for a podcast, but I was scared to do it. And he's like, let me get you hooked up with a booth space and you're going to do it. I'm like, Rob, that's in 3 weeks. He's like, figure it out.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I went there and I had this mustache and Prime Archery was there. And at the time I wasn't working with them. I just worked for a bow shop on the side. And they were like, we want some like real consumers that are using our bows to you know, give testimonies. And I did this thing and it was in a commercial. Well, I started the podcast and I had interviewed I had interviewed a guy, and I was like, Tim Burnett, solo hunter, and he Tim's like, you know what's weird? He's like, I get a bunch of messages. He's like, for some reason, like, your picture popped up, and I'm like, I've seen this guy before. Well, I was in his commercial for his TV show.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like a big brand guy. He's like, dude, you can't get rid of that thing. He's like, that's recognizable.
Is that your trademark now?
He's like, and that's not the only reason why I keep it. I can't grow a beard, so that's why it's kind of like, sure, and my grandfather has a big mustache, and it's just like, I don't know, I just kind of kept it. So I haven't decided if I'll continue for a lifetime with it, but as of right now, I don't see it going anywhere.
There you go, man.
Yeah.
I like it. I've been seeing a lot of mullets and stashes lately. This is the first time in my life I've ever just had a mustache.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Now, I've had, like, big, like, biker fuse.
Fu Manchu type stuff.
Yeah, like, grow my beard. I mean, it would just be, like, because I normally have a beard, and it would just be, like, me shave my cheeks and then cut the middle out of my mustache.
Yeah.
But, you know, dude, my kids wanted me to grow my hair out. They like it. I was like, I'll grow my hair up for a while. It's kind of becoming annoying again. And then I was like, man, I've never had a mustache. Let me see what's up. My mom also was like really against it, so I did it to irritate her a bit.
I've always kept my hair, well, not, I shouldn't say always. I usually keep my hair short, and I would like just grow it out during hunting season because I just,
yeah,
more so lazy to book the hair appointment. And but I've just kind of grown it out for the last year, and I just got it trimmed last week, but it was a whole year since I even had it trimmed, from having it completely like shaved to just letting it grow, no trimming, nothing. It was just, you know,
I didn't cut my hair for 10 years. Like, I grew dread, I had like three big giant dreadlocks.
Did you really?
Until I was like 28. Yeah, I think 28, man. And it just like practicality just got on my nerves, man. But I don't know, I think I've done my mustache. I think I'm going to let my beard grow back.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, man.
You don't want to be associated with me. I get it.
No, I mean, I look like unemployed Neil deGrasse Tyson right now. You know what I mean? Like, just get that beard back, man. That beard also, like, covers up that little jug. So, you know, I just let it come back. It'll be all right.
Yeah.
I've irritated my mom and my wife enough.
Yeah, that's really funny.
These jokers look like they're trying to go shed hunt, man.
Yeah, they think they are.
Not without you, huh?
No. We probably should wrap up. Gotta do another video event. I'm sure you got some stuff planned here, and then you gotta get out of here today, don't you?
Yeah, man. I'm gonna go eat sushi in Salt Lake City with Jay Byer and get my butt back to Arkansas by noon tomorrow.
$500 sushi dinner?
Byer's been spear fishing with Justin Leed in Hawaii. And he's making sushi.
Oh.
I'm not going for no. Yeah. I'm going to Byer's house to use his shower. You know, like, I've slept in his house a bunch. I've slept in my van outside his house a bunch, man. Like, Byer's house is like the place you go to like hang out. Mm-hmm. His wife's real cool, man. Real tough, cool lady, dude. Sweetheart. You know, his kids are awesome. It's just really any excuse I get to hang out with that dude, man. Like, he's the one who got me in with Sitka, man. Like, he took me on my only elk hunt, dude. Like, I love that guy, and I want to hang out with him. I mean, really.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
And eat his sushi.
Let's get to the root cause of this.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, but.
He turned me on to sushi, man. All the cooking I've done, I was like, dude, this raw fish stuff, dog. And he, like, turned me on to it, and I was like, oh, man, this is. It's a matter of ingredients.
Yep.
If you're getting really excellent stuff, I can tell you I'm not going to eat catfish ceviche in Little Rock, you know. I know you got this fish with like one of the best spear fishermen in the world, and it was treated really well, and you're gonna prepare it simply and like let it be what it is. Like, I'll do that all day long, man.
Heck yeah, that's awesome. Well, for anyone that's listening to my podcast and doesn't know who you are, give some how people can find you.
It's just Black Duck Revival. There's like a couple YouTube things. There's like a meat eater thing. If you just look at Black Duck Revival on Google, and then same thing on Instagram or the website. And there's like recipes on there. There's by the time this comes out, I'll have my hunt school dates announced. We're doing some stuff in Texas, hunting on Johnny Ringo's old ranch. You know Johnny Ringo from Tombstone?
Yeah,
man. Don't you have the guts to play for blood? I guess he built this ranch, and so we're doing some like hunt schools there. And But I don't know, just Black Duck Revival, you'll find me.
Awesome, man. Well,
and then what about you?
Okay, well, my stuff's just East Meets West. East Meets West Hunt is the podcast and Instagram, East Meets West Outdoors, website, YouTube, or my name, Bo Martonic. You search either of those, you'll find all my stuff there. So,
dude, real quick, what's the etymology of Martonic?
So that is Czechoslovakian.
Dude.
What?
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by that stuff. Yeah. I was like, that's some Eastern European stuff right there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right.
So. Sweet, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I'm just finding it interesting. I just wanted to know, man. Your name's not Smith, so I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Well, shit, man. Hey, I appreciate it. It's cool to get to hang with you, bud.
Yeah, man. It was great having this conversation. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. And everybody, thanks for listening. Until next time.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.